Well, welcome to the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch. Today, will there be a Twilight Grand Final this year? We look at all the JLT preseason games and how the players and coaches adapted to the new rules.
That was out of bounds!
I don't believe it! I see it, but I don't believe it!
Dennis, where are you? I need you right now!
What's your name?
You're quite brilliant.
Yeah, terrific.
Oh! The stadium holds its breath.
It's Duff and Quarters.
Brought to you by Tab Touch.
Well, hello, everybody. It's time for the Duff and Quarters podcast. This is the podcast where you've got to show us all the guts and determination you've got in your body.
Teddy Whitten.
Yes, Teddy Whitten.
I want guts and I want determination.
Round one of JLT Community Series is over and done with. The AFLW is building to a nice climax.
It is.
Glenn Quartermain and I are going to take you through what we thought of the first round of the JLT Community Series. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the possibility of a night grand final this year. Quarters, I think the AFL CEO might be headed in that direction.
Yeah, I don't think there's a possibility. Generally, when he goes to the commission with a recommendation, it's the recommendation goes through. So I think it will be a night. I think it'll be a twilight grand final, not a night grand final. So I think it'll be 4:40 start, and that happens in about a week's time. So normally they decide on the grand final about April, May. So it's a little bit earlier than normal, which is good. But I would expect that next week he will recommend a twilight grand final. Now, what he's saying is, I'm not telling you what my recommendation is. I'm suggesting that there will be a twilight grand final, but I'm not sure about this year yet. But I'm just expecting this year.
So is a twilight grand final a little bit like that former New Zealand medium pacer Bob Kunis? Is it neither one thing nor the other?
No, I don't think it is, actually. I think it's... I am a very much for a day grand final. I'm a traditionalist, as you know, Duff, but I don't see that it will really affect too much. I think it's 2 hours, 2 hours, 10 minutes, in fact, after the long-term start. We've known it as a 2:30 grand final or a 12:30 grand final over here. You know, I think, well, it's all about the presentation post-match. It's about the pyrotechnics. It's about the entertainment. And that will bring that into it. They already have the post-match celebrations now with the players on stage, which has become a bit of a part of it. I don't mind all that stuff. You know, I think it's a good compromise between the traditionalists and those who want to see a night grand final. I think Channel 7, the broadcasters, or whoever they may be going down the track, will love it.
Our employers.
But they will love it.
Okay, so what other changes does this bring on? Does this mean instead of a pre-match entertainment, we're looking at halftime entertainment like they do in the Super Bowl?
I would think so, yes. Yes. So that will be around the post-game time. So the past post-game time. Yeah, I think so. And I like that. You know, I think they haven't really got the pre-game right. I've been to a few NRL grand finals, and they nail the pre-game. I just think the AFL post-game is so far superior to the NRL's post-game. They haven't quite got it right, the AFL, but the post-game stuff is sensational, I think, with the AFL.
I think the problem with the pre-game is that even when you get the entertainment right, the punters aren't into it anyway. They're waiting for the game to
exactly.
start.
Exactly. So this will, I think half-time is where you want it. You've had a chance to see a half a footy. The nerves are a little bit, well, maybe they're not, but the nerves are gone so much. And... bang, you're into a half-time. You've probably had a couple of frothies and settled down. And at home, I think it gives you something to look forward to as well.
Or you've been to a pre-grand final lunch.
North
and
Melbourne.
You've had about 24 frothies and you're three sheets to the wind and trying to stay awake for the second half of the game.
Well, there is that side of it. The North Melbourne traditional grand final breakfast will become a long one.
Correct.
But I think we can't really shape our game around people's drinking habits too much.
You can't. I think we need to encourage responsible drinking and responsible gambling. Of course, we are brought to you today by Tab Touch.
Very nice segue.
And we hope that people will follow the leadership of our role model people in the game.
Well, most of them, yes.
Most of them.
The other thing, the other points...
Speaking of role models.
The other points Gil McLachlan made were they will continue to review the illicit drugs policy. So basically they said nothing. they'll stick with 22 games. So there was this talk about 17 games, and then the finale to the season. But I think they do need to look at that. And they're going to appoint a full-time mental health officer, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah, I like that.
They'll oversee what happens at the club. So there are a couple of things that they'll discuss at next week's AFL Commission meeting.
So if there is a full-time mental health officer employed by the AFL, does that mean that maybe one of the tweaks we will see to the illicit drug testing policy is we will see clubs brought more into the loop when one of their players has got an issue?
I absolutely hope so, Duff. I would expect yes would be the answer to that, and I hope so, because I think clubs are small communities, and I think they know the players as well as anyone and how to deal with them.
Well, they know the players better than anyone,
don't
they?
Yeah, they do. Well,
apart from their families.
Exactly.
And their loved ones.
Yes, they do. So, and in many cases, probably more at that point in time. So they live with them every day. So, I think we need to go down that path. Rules stuff. How'd you find the first round of JLT Community Series and the rules?
I like the rules. I like the effect they have on the game. I don't like the confusion around it. And I think if there was one thing that they could have done, and I think you mentioned this before we came on air, it is take a little bit longer between goals to allow the clubs to get their heads around it, because I think a lot of the breaches we saw late in games when players got tired, we saw it late in the West Coast game against Geelong when they botched an interchange, and we saw it two or three times in the last quarter at Joondalup in the Fremantle-Collingwood game yesterday, where Fremantle botched interchanges and basically they couldn't get the player coming onto the ground into the right zone quickly enough. I think there were times when the umpires weren't sure what was the right penalty to apply for the particular breach of the rules. And a couple of times we saw goal umpires making decisions, which is going to be necessary because they're the ones that are basically going to be policing the goal square breaches. And a lot of the breaches we saw in games were goal square breaches. But in terms of the effect on the game, I love the fact that it turns the centre clearance into an offensive weapon.
Yep.
And I love the fact that, you know, most clubs will say that the game is decided in the midfield, so therefore there's a lot of quality in the midfield, and so you've got these great players going largely uninterfered with. They're going at each other four against four in the centre square.
Brilliant.
And the outcome has the ability to have a significant bearing on the game. I think that's great. I think it creates scoring bursts, and we saw that either side of three-quarter time in the West Coast Geelong game on Friday night when West Coast split the game open. And we saw Port Adelaide come surging back into their game against Adelaide down at Port Perry because Paddy Ryder went into the middle and started dominating the run.
And Essendon as well against Carlton.
Yes, Essendon. So Carlton got clear and then Essendon came back hard at them. And again, that was born out of sort of centre square dominance, getting the ball in quick and one-on-one. So I think the great things about it are the one-on-ones it creates at either end, and the ability for the midfielders to go at it quality against quality and not have sort of players streaming in from all angles, running interference and cleaning them up.
The common comment from midfielders this weekend too about the added defensive pressure it puts on them, because
vulnerable was the word that got used a couple of times.
Because, you know, while they do have, you can break free at the centre clearance, it sets you up for it. But if it goes the other way, there's a lot of problem there. So, it's going to put a bit more on the midfielders, I think. But as you say, it's going to be nothing better than seeing, you know, class midfielders grouped together and going at it.
And at the end of the day, the game, I think whether you like change in the game and whether you believe in evolution or revolution, and this is a revolution,
No,
it's not evolution, the game had become something it wasn't designed to be. And the whole idea of this game is to try and restore some of what it set out to do, with forwards playing forward, midfielders playing in the midfield, and defenders playing in defence. And at least at various times of the game, they adopt those starting positions, and so patterns of play can emerge out of that that are the patterns of play we remember football as. And I think that's a good thing. What do you think? Are you a thumbs up, thumbs down?
I'm a thumbs up. And equally fascinating for me is to see how the coaches counteract it as the season unfolds. I think half of them probably don't know. Well, most of them probably are still working on strategies. I think that, we're not going to see a lot of it in the JLT community series, how they're going to combat it. I think at the moment there's just pretty well all-out attack at the moment and playing kids and seeing, you know, rotating through systems, seeing how certain players go. But, yeah, I'm a massive thumbs up. Two words spring to mind, space and goals.
Yes.
And we're going to see more of both. And I love that about footy. I love the old – if people can go to the footy to watch one-on-one contests, I'm talking Kerry Jakovic, you know, years back I'm going Knights, Vanderhaar. People go to the footy to see those one-on-one contests. You'd pay to go even when they're not your teams.
Yeah, and I think the great players will adapt. So – I asked Jeremy McGovern about this at the Eagles community camp a week or so ago and sort of said, are you going to have to change the way you play? Because our perception of Jeremy is that he's the floater. You know, he's the one that reads the play and becomes the two-on-one and takes the mark. And he pointed out to me, he said, look, he said, this is at centre bounces. He said, I'm generally standing next to someone at the centre bounce. I'm not running around doing my own thing. So he said, as far as he was concerned, it's not going to change that much for him. And I think this... I'm not saying West Coast is any more likely to mount a successful premiership defence as a result of this, but they're certainly no less likely.
Well,
because they have enough quality in the midfield to influence the outcome there, and they have one-on-one quality at either end. They're going to be kicking to Kennedy and Darling, good one-on-one players, and they're going to be defending with Barris, McGovern and Hearn, all good one-on-one players.
And you're going to have that beautiful boot of Shannon Hearn kicking out to the wing. And that's what we saw a lot of in these JLT community games round one. We did see a lot of long kickouts.
Yep.
Because you've got the extended goal square now by virtue of the fact that the man on the mark stands further back.
Yep.
You don't have to touch the ball on your foot. So they're getting a little bit of space and they're kicking it long. I wonder where that kick to the little back pocket, that dinky little kick's going to go, Duff, to the back pocket.
Well, you know what's going to happen? You're going to create what they call in gridiron horizontal spread. So you create the horizontal spread in gridiron by showing yourself to be willing to throw the Hail Mary to spread the defence out because they've got to guard the long one. So what's going to happen is that players like Hearn and Jetta at West Coast, players like Nathan Wilson and Luke Ryan at Fremantle, and every club is going to have their one or two that take these kick-ins and
Matthew
a specialist
Suckling
at that.
Suckling's
going to be one, yep. And they're going to show the potential to kick the ball to the wing. So that's going to spread the defensive mechanisms of the team that is trying to protect themselves against the kick-in. And then it's going to open up all these little holes for shorter kicks on the 45, maybe just inside the 50, and then they'll attack from there. And all that stuff, that opens up the game as much as the centre clearance
yep.
zones positions does. So I think that's going to be a pretty significant development in the game as well.
Now, we saw Frio. I thought they took a fair bit out of the game yesterday. But what we did see was dominate inside 50s, but a bit more of the same in terms of skill execution.
Yeah, I think, look...
poor skill execution, that is.
So they've got a bit to come back into that. And I think if I was to draw a line through the manpower of the two teams on the field at Joondalup yesterday, I would say both teams had about the same amount of quality out.
Yep.
Collingwood had more cover for that quality, particularly with Beams and Elliott.
Well, they've got more depth.
Coming in. I think... what it did for me yesterday was reaffirm Collingwood's credentials as a genuine top four team.
Agree.
And I think Elliott, we knew about Beams. Beams is an A-grade midfielder, and he comes into to a midfield that was already A-grade.
Yep.
So that's going to create a scary engine room.
Probably the best midfield in it, and now you add Beams into it.
But Elliott...
yeah.
Elliott is a massive boost.
Provided he stands up. Now,
yes.
We saw we hadn't played since the, I think, the final round or late in 2017.
Yes.
Hadn't played a full game. So it's been great to see him. I love watching him. He's a great little footballer. I hope he does stand up. Adds another dimension to them. He's a terrific footballer.
So if you look at the way their forward line structured up last year without him, and now you look at it the way it structures up with him, because he plays tall and small, you've got to be really careful about who gets caught on him.
Yeah, and you've got De Goey as well, remember?
So, De Goey comes into that, yeah. and Jaden Stevenson is a year older. So,
geez, there's some talent down there, isn't there?
So often Fremantle were having to work out where to put Griffin Logue and where to put Taylan Duman because they're like the third talls,
yep.
And one of them had to get on Elliott and one of them had to get on Stevenson. So you had to be nimble enough to get on Stevenson and you had to be good enough in the air to play on Elliott. That's going to be a massive challenge for teams defending Collingwood this year.
Yep.
And I think Collingwood's ball movement, and this is the hope for Fremantle, because Collingwood's ball movement was mediocre 18 months ago. It is now exceptional.
Yep.
And that was on display clearly at Joondalup yesterday. They won the game not through greater effort, but through cleaner ball movement better ball handling, better kicking skills.
So in the past, we've been talking about Freo's forward line woes, and now we've got almost an embarrassment of riches. You know, Hogan, Lobb, Cox, Tabiner, the little guys, Matera. And we saw a bit, we've seen some commentary on it as well, suggesting Freo has too many of them now. I don't agree with that, but it was interesting to see Cox down there kick three. I still like him sort of as a floater across halfback, as an intercept mark. But I'm wondering whether, do you think Tabiner could play that role at all?
What, across halfback?
Yeah.
No, I think, look, Matt Tabiner, I think, showed a fair bit last year forward. He was, to me, of the three tall forwards, I mean, Hogan couldn't get near it, was, you know, getting used to a new team, was in the wrong spots a lot. And, yeah, and even when he got himself in the right spots, they didn't see him and didn't use him, or they took too long getting it there. And so
spent a fair bit of time in the middle too. And
he came up the ground
a couple
of
kicks down half back.
Yeah. But to me, Jesse Hogan's going to play. Rory Lobb's going to play as the forward ruck. Rory Lobb, I thought,
loved his game.
Was impressive,
yeah,
yesterday. If Tabiner's going to drop marks like he did yesterday, he can't be that third forward. You know, if he needs to be better than he was yesterday, or Brendan Cox is a far better bet as the third tall forward. And I think the other thing for Fremantle is that they have to get what's on the ground right beneath their feet. Those big guys have to make a contest, have to get the ball on the deck, and then the little guys have got to go to work. Too often there was an uncontested Collingwood mark and there was a ball swept clear without enough Fremantle pressure on.
I would have thought with the talent they have there now in the forward line talls, and the talent they've got as, say, your small medium, Walters, Ballantyne, Matera, these types of players, I would have thought that you've definitely got the ingredients there.
So
you pull that off.
Matera showed a bit, kicked two goals. You'd still like him to try and push a little bit deeper and get front and square. He's more a sort of an in-space type of player, lead up, get into space, turn around and go back. I would like to see Brandon Matera try and earn his living at the feet of the tall forwards, but hopefully that'll come. I think the one who I think he's in a bit of trouble now is Hayden Ballantyne.
Yep.
I think that Ballas is he's just lost that yard, and he's not quite there. He crumbed a couple yesterday. He kicked a goal. He had another one that was nearly a goal, but it was touched off the boot. Another one that he snapped and missed. So he's gotten sort of front and square and done his job a few times. But the worry for me with Hayden is that he's not quite there with his pressure anymore, yeah, and they're able to slip his tackles and get clear of him. And I think that might be a problem for him. He's probably got a little bit of leeway in the short term because Sam Switkowski pinged a hamstring early in yesterday's game.
And he's the most likely to step into that role.
Well, he was picked yesterday, so that tells you of the young small forwards, he's the one at the head of the queue.
How bad's the hammy?
Well, he's got a history.
Yeah, okay.
So he did a big one about this time last year, and he stopped like he'd been shot yesterday. So I suspect it's not a small one.
Yeah.
So I think you're looking at 4 to 6 weeks minimum for Sam Switkowski. The way he walked off the ground tells me that it's not minor, and the history usually adds 2 or 3 weeks to it anyway. And the other thing I reckon Fremantle has to think about is they have some good ball users in their smaller defenders at the back. So Taylan Duman, I think, is good with ball in hand. I think Luke Ryan is good with ball in hand, and obviously Wilson is good with ball in hand as well.
Very good with ball in hand.
Do they really need Adam Chera back there? Because he's sort of playing back mid at the moment.
Well, no, I think he'll go mid. He played mainly halfback yesterday, yeah?
He played halfback with a little bit of mid yesterday. I would like to see Adam Chera be mid forward. And then you're going to see more situations where the ball is in Adam Chera's hand and there's a forward leading at him, and that is a good outcome for Fremantle because he is less likely to miss the target and he is more likely to send the ball to a dangerous position. So that, you know, there's a bit to work on for Freo.
And Brayshaw, tick. Tucker, a tick, definitely yesterday.
They were the two big ticks. Them and Lobb, I think, were the three big ticks. I thought Alex Pearce was really good early.
Yep.
But we know Alex Pearce is a pretty good player. Brayshaw was very, very good, close to Fremantle's best. Tucker, Ross Lyon is flagging a tagging role for him. And he was very good.
So where does Bailey Banfield fit into that mix then?
So I'd say he's the pressure forward at this stage, which is okay, but it's more of that Fremantle thing where a lot of grunt, not a lot of finish. So I think provided Bailey can do enough and add enough polish to his game to kick his two goals a game and stick a couple of tackles and force a couple of turnovers, that's fine. But he has to be able to finish. You know, he can't have Bailey Banfield kicking 0-3 and 2 out on the full as a pressure forward, because that's too many scoring opportunities butchered. So that's a work in progress too. So I think there's a bit to work on, but there's still a lot of work to do.
While we're on Freo, we should give the Fremantle women a tick. Great start to the year. They did have a hiccup in Adelaide last week. They bounced back at the weekend. Interesting, that Conference A they're in, it's pretty tough. They kept this, it's really sudden death now. So they've got Geelong away and North Melbourne at home. Very tough North Melbourne. I think they'll win the flag. But look,
I think Adelaide will win the flag.
Do you? Okay. They have to win both to play finals. So I think there's a step up. And just the women's game across the board, I think at the pointy end, we've definitely seen a vast improvement. Yep. There is now a very distinct gulf between the worst and the best. I guess that had to happen, and it'll happen again next year when there's more clubs in. But I've liked watching the pointy end games. There's been a bit more, the skill has improved. And this is going to happen exponentially because we won't see so much of it yet, but with the elite junior pathways coming through, 4 or 5 years' time, you'll just see a sudden improvement. But I think it'll gradually improve as years go by. You'd like to see the top end meet the bottom end a little bit more. But, you know, well done for the Fremantle women, and let's hope they win their final too. And I think Adelaide, great side. I think North's going to be the team to beat.
Well, Adelaide gave North an almighty touch-up at the weekend. Yep. So I think Adelaide, given what they did to Fremantle and given how strongly Fremantle's competed against everyone else, Adelaide looks to me as that they've got their game together at the right time, and they've got serious quality.
So is North. They've got there's riches there.
Two outstanding features of the Fremantle game at the weekend quarters. Kiara Bowers' game, for a person who's had three knee reconstructions, that was one of the great individual performances in the three seasons of AFLW. 23 disposals, 16 tackles, 8 clearances, 6 inside 50s, and a goal. It was... I would suggest that without Kiara Bowers, that is a game hanging in the balance. The other outstanding player in the game, I think, you know, Sabrina Duffy probably had her worst game of the season until three-quarter time, and then had a hand in all three Fremantle goals in the last quarter. Socket, a brilliant one. Got a gimme after a 50-metre penalty when she probably should have been done for ducking rather than having her opponent penalised for too high, and then a pass to Gemma Houghton in the goal square for another one. So Sabrina Duffy, for a kid to stand up after having an ordinary day to come to the party when her team really needed her, I think that was really good.
It's an exciting forward line, and the good thing about the weekend was they were challenged in the last quarter, and they were able to withstand it and go on with it. So, you know, well done.
And Paul Groves, none too happy with the umpiring.
Well, are they ever?
The Bulldogs coach, he was bouncing up and down, and he said a few things. Well, he made an inference about it during the press conference, and then he had a few things to say off the record, shall we say, as he was leaving the press conference, and certainly not too pleased. Let's go all the way back to Friday night quarters.
Yep.
And West Coast versus Geelong. What did you see? And
I saw Oscar Allen as a player. We knew he was a player of the future, but I just like seeing, you know, it unfold in front of you. Mm. Now, obviously, JK is coming back, but I look at that Eagles and look at what it's going to look like in 3-4 years' time permanently in that forward position. Probably we'll get a game before then. I'm just saying that he'll be that. He's a jet.
So JK comes back, but presumably they think he'll play in round one.
Yep.
How does your West Coast forward line look? So when they structure up 6, 6, and 6,
well, you got
first bounce round one. Who are the six players who are inside the 50 for West Coast?
Well, you've got Darling, obviously.
Kennedy, obviously.
Kennedy's obviously another one.
Is there a third tall there?
Well, you could float one in and out. You could possibly put a Waterman or an Allen in there. I like three talls, but I like the option to play three talls. But I mean, you've got your fleet of smalls too, who were pivotal to last year.
So Liam Ryan,
Willie Rioli,
they're in.
Oh, I think without question. Yeah.
Jamie Cripps not there. Is Jack Petrucelli in that forward
well,
six for
how
round
long's,
one?
How long's he out? The round two, three.
Cripps is not playing round one, as far as they're
concerned. Well, Petrucelli's in then for round one.
Okay.
And it's, you know, I guess it's his to lose, because Cripps you would expect to come back into that role.
And I guess then it comes down to Do you play a third tour, which means an Allen or a Brander, which at this stage, based on what we saw on Friday night, is Allen?
Yep.
Or do you play that hybrid forward, which means it's Waterman? That's probably going to be the decision you make on the other player.
Well, it depends on your opposition too, I guess.
Yes.
On that day. I'd like to see Oscar Allen get as much game time as possible.
Yep.
At this point. Love what I saw.
Okay. What about St Kilda North Melbourne? What did you read into that?
Well, Matthew Parker.
Very good, wasn't he?
Yeah. South Fremantle forward making his mark. So, I didn't see anything that jumped out at me that suggested. I mean, it's really hard at this time of year too. I mean, we try not get sucked into JLT community games as we did last year, but as we generally haven't in the past. North perhaps with more potential than St Kilda. St Kilda, I need reassuring with St Kilda. I'm just not sure there's enough A graders in there. Mm. North Melbourne have built really well and could be one of those teams that's just rise and start knocking on the door of the eight, but I'm not sure about if St Kilda is capable of that.
Yeah, I still think St Kilda is towards the bottom, but yep. I did like their effort, and I did like, given that they've talked about before that pressure is their brand, there was a bit of that about them on the weekend, and that was played in 40-degree heat, which means it's very hard to maintain that sort of pressure. Parker, look, if you're looking at a good-sized player who can play forward, can sniff a goal and has great chase-down speed and has a strong body to make a physical impact around the contest, Parker has some great raw materials to work with, I think, at AFL level. So there is hope for him. He's got a lot of work to do. But two goals in the last quarter when they had to kick two or three to steady themselves when North came at them a bit, Parker had a hand in those two or three goals, and I think that was a great feather in his cap. And at this stage, you'd have to think he's a reasonable chance to play in round one.
I would have thought so.
Brisbane and Hawthorn, hard to get a gauge on that because Hawthorn sent the Widgiemooltha thirds to Queensland for that game.
I mean, if you're Hawthorn, I think the performance of James Cousins stands out. He will make the next... Well, he'll be in the middle by virtue of the fact that Tom Mitchell's not. Now, there's still spec that Tom's going beautifully and that he could be a chance late in the year. I think you just rule a line through him and
broken
anything else is a bone.
Or
two broken bones in the leg. But James Cousins' performance significant. I think Sicily's performance significant. And I think if you're looking at Brisbane, you're looking at Lachie Neal's performance, you're looking at Rayner's performance. Gee, there's a lot to like about that Brisbane side. And they did play a predominantly A-grade side against a third side. Still won by 40 points. A lot to like about Brisbane and reassured me because I'm having them right on the verge of the eight, if not into the eight, and reassured me that I'm on the right track there.
Yeah, I've got them towards the eight. I'm not putting them in, and I'm not sure they're going to be absolutely banging the door down of the eight either. If anything, I was slightly underwhelmed quarters, but given what they were up against, I just thought that was a game that Brisbane could have really come out and made a bit of a statement.
That may have been the reason why. I'm just not sure. You know, I just, again, don't try and read too much into these games. I try and look at the pure potential of them.
So speaking of reading things into things, Lachie Neal's post-match comments.
Oh, well.
I think, look, in fairness to all concerned, what I would say about, we knew there were some issues when Lachie Neal left Fremantle, but I don't think what's been extrapolated out of his comments is that Nathan Fyfe was the issue.
Yeah.
I don't think Nathan Fyfe was the issue when Lachie Neal left Fremantle. I think that Lachie Neal saw a trend in the younger players at the club where they weren't working hard enough and weren't setting the sort of professional standards he wanted to see.
Yeah. Also saw a trend in his bank balance improving as well.
Well, that's the other thing. Big deal.
Well, get half his luck.
With an eight as the first digit in that deal, and that will shift you a fair way.
He'll fit in well there. They've got a lot of talent. And, Hipwood. There's just so much upside for Brisbane, I think.
Do you think, though, that the loss of Dane Beams is going to hit him a bit harder than...
I reckon they've got a fair bit of depth there in that midfield. I'm sorry to see Dane Beams go. I was happy to see they obviously had to clear some room too for Lachie Neal, but I was happy to see Dane Beams go up to Brisbane. I think his father was ill, and that's what the AFL community does. Mm-hmm. But I didn't like to see him just head back on his terms when it suited him to head back. I just don't like that. I would prefer to see him stay up in Brisbane for the long course. He was running around best and fairest time telling everyone he was going to stay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I didn't like it. It's a difficult one. One thing that never changes in people is the human condition. It tends to afflict us all at various times.
I think they'll go okay without him, is the answer to that. I think they'll be good.
But I wonder whether Beams departing is the difference between Brisbane actually being a contender for top eight and this year instead being a team that just improves more.
Yeah, it could possibly
and puts themselves in position to be in the top eight next year. Carlton v Essendon. Two words for your quarters. It's a Christian name and a surname, Sam Walsh.
Yeah, and I'll throw another one in there, Cripps as well. I mean, he's lost nothing over the summer, but Sam Walsh looks a ripper. Get on him for the Rising Star. Ready made, round one. We'll just pick up his 20 plus every week and probably 12 of them contested. Just looks a fantastic player, which is why he went number one.
Number one. So it's funny, some kids you see, they run around in the TAC Cup and they run around in the State 18s championships, and you look at them, you say, wow, that's a talented kid. And then you see them after a pre-season at AFL level and you go, geez, that's an impressive young man.
Yeah.
And that's what Sam Walsh, what I noticed about Sam Walsh. He the last time I saw him play last year, he was an impressive kid, and now he's an impressive young man.
Time and space, makes good decisions, really, you know, it hits the spot when he gets the footies. Everything to love about, you know, number one pick, and he'll be, I think Brendan Bolton's got himself a beauty.
Yep, I agree. Now, the other thing, given the rules and the way they'll affect the way the game's played, I thought that despite a few pessimistic predictions about GWS, I think the new rules will suit GWS.
Yeah, look, they did nothing wrong. I mean, a comfortable win over Sydney. The usual suspects there at the forefront of it.
No Josh Kelly. Yeah, no Toby Green.
I'll hold my
No Big Mummy.
Yeah, I have concerns for GWS and their depth and their midfield depth.
No Nick Haynes.
That's my concern. But look, did nothing wrong at the weekend.
Well, I reckon Josh Kelly and Toby Green will help midfield depth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they will. Yeah. They've just lost a lot.
Yeah.
They've lost a lot over the last 2 or 3 years. And you wouldn't want to... If everything stays well and good, then they'll be really hard to beat. But I'm just worried that if they do suffer one or two, they'll just really start to be
tested. Yeah, I do agree with that. And the one thing that the loss of Dylan Sheil in particular doesn't afford them, they can't afford the run of injuries they've had in the last two seasons. You know, if that happens, that's going to kill them. But if you've got their ball movement and their ball use and their running power, and you've got six forwards isolated against six defenders, I think that's going to suit Jeremy Cameron.
Yeah.
I think Toby Green is going to be incredibly hard to defend.
It's a pity John Patton will miss again. How long's he out for?
Not sure when John Patton is back.
I think it's mid to late.
But I like... his name escapes me. The other forward, the... Himmelberg.
Yes.
I like Himmelberg.
It's a hard name to forget. just think Hindenburg.
Iceberg, Hindenburg, Himmelberg. I hope
career ends better than the Hindenburg.
I like him as a second forward. Now, yeah. I think he's got height. He gives a contest.
Yeah.
He can be a lead-up target.
Played pretty well in the finals, didn't he?
Yeah, he can smell a goal. Yeah. And so I think he's a handy player. Gold Coast.
Yes, well... Will Powell, winning goal.
Will Powell was impressive against
Western Bulldogs.
And against Brisbane in the scratchy the previous week as well. So he's a guy, he's got, you know, this is a big call, but there's a bit of Dean Kemp about Will Powell, that pencil-thin, silky-skilled player who can play midfield forward. And I don't know whether he'll be as brave as Kempe, because Kempe was braver than he should have been. But
There's a lot of raised eyebrows when Will Powell was picked, but there might be a stroke of genius, you know. We'll see. Certainly so far, it looks so.
Yeah.
25 changes on and off the field, Gold Coast, players and staff. There's a lot of change, and they flagged it. It had to be done.
Yep.
I just hope now we see some... I mean... You know, I'm not expecting anything bar, say, a bottom three position for Gold Coast.
Yep.
But I hope we see some improvement and just gradual improvement, and it's stopped. You know, hopefully all the holes in the dike are plugged and it's stopped the flood of talent coming out, and we start to see them building towards something great.
Well, you can do it, can't you? It appears that Brisbane have done that.
Yeah.
It appears that they've stopped the bleeding in terms of...
Some great pickups in the draft.
Yeah. So fingers crossed that Gold Coast can do enough and create enough interest up there to make players want to, maybe not necessarily want to go there, but want to stay there when they get there.
And Doggies, I didn't really read too. I think they were okay. They were okay, but they're one of the teams I think will improve. And I didn't see anything to discourage me. But, you know, again, I think we saw the usual suspects for the Dogs yesterday, so, or at the weekend.
And Melbourne-Richmond?
Yeah, good contest. Richmond, I'd still want to see what that forward line looks like with Lynch in it.
Yes, and now Tom Lynch, they're making noises like
he
doesn't get up for round one and two.
Yeah, so that's the real interesting. I think we know Richmond can play. I picked them to win the flag, and I stick by that. You know, they'll go through their pre-season. There'll be sort of flashy performances. There'll be the poor quarters. But they'll be up and running come round one. I'm really interested to see what sort of a potent weapon they become when Lynch is in that forward line and how it affects the dynamic there, which has been absolutely critical to how they perform the last 2 years.
So based on what you saw on the weekend, we talked briefly last week about what we thought our top ends of the ladder would roughly be. Did you see anything that jumped off the page at you that makes you
Pretty well what I thought it would be. I think West Coast will be top four. I think Collingwood will be top four. I think Hawthorn will be bottom end of the eight. If they're in the eight, they'll be about in that eighth position. Brisbane will be pushing for it. That didn't change too much for mine. No, and it probably won't next weekend either, regardless of results. I think give me six rounds into the season proper and I'll tell you.
Okay. I think the one thing that probably jumped out at me was that I'm very confident now Collingwood will be top four. Just looking at the addition of Beams and Elliott into that team, and also Darcy Moore showing a bit as the tall defender,
yep,
and Ben Reid back and playing as a tall option in attack. They've still got Mason Cox waiting in the wings. I think that those things will all augur well for Collingwood.
Too many hairbands in the competition, Duff, still.
That's the other thing?
I want to see a reduction in hairbands.
Hairbands? Yeah. What about buns, the man bun? Are you a man bun?
No, I'm not. No, I'd like to see those reduced, and I'd like to see the hairbands gone.
Would you like
to see
them eliminated, perhaps legislated against
Glenn? I don't know
Glenn.
What would have happened to me 20, 25 years ago if I had run out in the footy field at the low level I played at with a hairband.
Have you ever had a ponytail, Glenn Quartermain?
Wouldn't have finished up on my head. No, but I had an A-grade mullet.
Did you?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I had a great mullet. And the porno moustache at one point too, but never, never, ever.
There are some things you think of that just can't be unthought, and that is one of those things. That'll be haunting me for the rest of the day, the thought of you with a mullet and a porno moustache.
I have a calendar, I'll show you.
All right, well, thank you very much for joining us today. Of course, bought to you generously by Tab Touch Quarters.
And we should say
thegame.com.au.
Yes, we've got a couple of days to sneak in, March 12th.
March 12th, you have to register by, so log on to thegame.com.au.
And if you do, you're a chance to win a double pass to every Optus home game with hospitality thrown in.
And that's for our tipping competition and our pick seven competition.
So thegame.com.au.
Yeah, make sure you get amongst it and get involved in it. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll talk about what might be coming up as far as teams are concerned. Perhaps we'll have an update on that Twilight Grand Final. We'll be back to talk to you then.
This has been the Duff and Quarters podcast, brought to you by Tab Touch.